Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. I watched, I guess it was NBC News Tonight, or was it ABC? One of the two network news newscasts. They're pretty much exactly the same, so it doesn't make any difference. It's just what pretty man, pretty white guy is hosting it. But in one of those newscasts, I especially noticed regarding the issue of Leon Panetta fessing up, more or less, that the CIA lies to Congress. Gee, there's a revelation. The anchor, and I think it was Charlie Gibson, gave it, I don't know, maybe a 15-second banner headline, and that was it. However, what was the other story that that went to a full report? Then immediately after, I think it was another. Was it a Michael Jackson? Another Michael Jackson story? I don't think it was. I think the media have kind of gotten away from Michael Jackson's story now that he's gone on to heaven. But the cavalier way this CIA Congress thing is being treated by media is pretty astonishing. And that's what we're going to talk about here at the beginning of the program tonight. One of the big questions is, what was it that on the, was it the 23rd or 24th of June when Leon Panetta went into executive session with the House in, or the House Intelligence Committee and said that he revealed something to them that shocked everybody. The word is that when Panetta told the House Intelligence Committee members what it was that had been kept secret, in other words, what had been, what they had lied about, the whole committee was stunned, even Republicans. That's the report. A Republican committee member, said it was something they hadn't heard before. Now, there's some ideas floating out there. One of them, I think. Well, let me go with this first. Sam Stein, writing at Huffington Post, suggests that maybe what the big revelation was the assassination ring that was being run out of Dick Cheney's office. Sam Stein says the revelation from seven Democrats that they were misled about a critical CIA program. Has sparked a debate that touches on the most sensitive areas of national security policy. What program exactly was being kept secret? Now, nobody's answering that. And everybody does the same thing they always do. Well, it's a national security issue. It is classified intelligence matter. Oh, sorry. But in various conversations, Sam writes, with sources on the Hill, two general theories have emerged. First is that the CIA was keeping quiet about the use of waterboarding on terrorist suspects. You remember Nancy Pelosi said she was misled by the intelligence agency on that very subject. But the dates don't line up, because in the letter, the seven Democrats note that members of Congress were misled for a number of years from 2001 to this week. Right? Pelosi contended the CIA lied to her about the harsh interrogation techniques, the torture, during the fall of 2002. And in a conversation with the Huffington Post, Representative Anna Eshoo, Democrat from California, one of the letter's signatories, said that Panetta, quote, stopped the program the day after he was informed, end quote. Waterboarding as torture was supposedly ended as a practice during the Bush years. So, what are the significant actions or the secret program that these seven lawmakers insist were kept from Congress? And Stein says another theory being bandied about concerns the executive assassination ring that was allegedly set up in answer to former vice president and war criminal Dick Cheney. And Seymour Hersh, of course, blew the cover on that in building off earlier reporting from the New York Times. Hersh in the New Yorker magazine said that such a ring existed. And Hearst said this, it wasn't in the New Yorker magazine. It was in a discussion at the University of Minnesota back in March of this year. Remember? Hearst said at the time, quote, "It's a special wing of our special ops community that is set up independently. They do not report to anybody except in the Bush-Cheney days. They reported directly to Cheney. They did not report to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff or to Gates, Secretary of Defense. They reported directly to him, Cheney." And then Hersh added, "Congress has no oversight of it. It's an executive assassination ring, essentially. It's been going on and on and on. Just today, in the New York Times," he said at the time, "there was a story that its leaders, a three-star admiral named William McRaven, ordered a stop to it because there were so many collateral deaths. Under Bush's authority, they've been going into countries, not talking to the ambassador or the CIA station chief, finding people on a list and executing them and leaving. That's been going on in the name of all of us." End quote, Seymour Hersh. Now, Congresswoman Eshoo, when she was asked if this was the basis of her letter to Panetta, she said she couldn't discuss it because it's a highly classified program. And she did note, however, that when Panetta told the committee members what it was that was being kept secret, quote, "the whole community was stunned, even Republicans," end quote. Now, Panetta said he himself was kept in the dark about the program, whatever it was, having only been told about the classified activity on June 23rd. Congresswoman Eshoo said, quote, "his own top leadership didn't even brief him that this program existed," end quote. The day after he found out on June 24th, Panetta briefed members of Congress about the matter. And 2 days later, on June 26th, that's when the seven lawmakers wrote Panetta asking him to publicly correct an earlier statement he had made in which he declared that it was not the CIA's, quote, "policy or practice to mislead Congress," end quote. Now, that was 2 weeks ago. Asked why it took 2 weeks for that letter to Panetta to become public, Congresswoman Eshoo said, well, it was just a matter of getting it cleared. Okay. I don't think it was that at all. I really don't. The assassination ring, it was in the popular media, thanks to Seymour Hersh. Torture has been out there. We've heard about that for how long? What else could it be? How about the coup in Honduras? You want to talk about that? Huh? Nobody else is. Let's talk about it. You know, I mentioned the other night that, in my opinion, when Zelaya, President Zelaya, was overthrown by the Honduran military, that this looked like another CIA operation. I got a couple of emails, flipping emails like, oh, Jesus Christ, you blame everything. You blame the crucifixion of Christ on the CIA. Possibly. Possibly. But supposing that's what shocked everybody, the coup. Now, that move could very well be that move against the democratically elected government of Honduras. Honduras is statistically it's the third poorest country, I think, in Central America, or maybe all of Latin America. You got to wonder if Barack Obama, Michael Parente, writing at Common Dreams the other day, says there's some questions here, like, is Obama innocent of the events occurring in Honduras, specifically the coup launched by the Honduran military that resulted in the abduction and forced deportation of democratically elected President Manuel Zelaya? Obama denounced the coup and demanded that the rules of democracy be honored, but there's some troubling questions that remain. We'll get to them as soon as we come back. Stay with us. Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 mile per gallon on the highway and up to 600 highway miles on a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox based on GM compact crossover segment. Excludes other GM vehicles. It's about 22 past the hour. So the question, at least the question I have, and I think people in Washington perhaps are starting to ask the same question. What the hell did Panetta say on the 26th of or was it the 24th of June that was so shocking? And supposing it was the fact that the United States military and the CIA mostly, but with the support from the military, were planning 2 days later to overthrow the government of Honduras. Because that's when it occurred, June 28th. Now, keep the dates in mind here if you can. Who overthrew the government of Honduras? Two or three of the key leaders are graduates of the School of the Americas, the torture and right-wing school here in Georgia, right here in Georgia, down at Fort Benning. School of the Americas has produced assassins, torturers, murderers, killers, people who go back to their home countries in Central and South America and do the bidding of the U.S. corporations that are, in a sense, paying for their training. It appears that you and I, as taxpayers, are paying for it. But in a historical sense, there has never been a progressive or a left-wing or a people's revolution in Central or South America that did not have, that wasn't either attempted to be stopped by the United States or was not given any backing by the United States. The only kinds of overthrows of government that we support in Central and South America for the past 100 years have been those that involved right-wing or military dictatorships murdering progressives and Democrats and liberals and populists and people who are trying to establish liberty and freedom and justice in Central and South America. The United States and corporate America would have none of that. Now, our history in Central and South America is as bloody as in any part of the world. We have been an absolute behemoth son of a bitch where it concerns Central and South America. There has been no mercy. There has been no let up. We have been doing it since the Spanish-American War in 1898 without let up. And before that, I mean, in the 1840s, we were sending expeditionary forces to Central and South America to murder worker organizations. It's horrifying. So, Honduras. There is not a leading right winger in the military or in the intelligence agencies in Honduras that wasn't either directly or indirectly trained by the United States. Now, as Michael Parenti writes, most all the senior Honduran military officers active in the coup are graduates of the Pentagon School of the Americas. The Honduran military is trained, advised, equipped, indoctrinated, and financed by the United States National Security State. Now, what's the United States National Security State? Do you know what that is? That's a combination of extreme right-wing militarists in this country and corporatists, primarily from the weapons industry. That Eisenhower warned us about, but also just everybody now, the energy industry, the food industry, the national security state. That is what we have become. And we make the determination in countries all around the world, probably in Iran, even as we speak, how much disorder there is going to be on the streets. But in Honduras, there is no question here. The generals who led this revolt against Zelaya would never have dared to move without at least tacit consent from the Obama White House or the Pentagon or the CIA or a combination of all three. Would not have dared do it. Now, If Obama is not directly involved, then he should be faulted for having no firm command over those U.S. operatives who were. Right? As Parenti writes, U.S. military must have known about the plot, and U.S. military intelligence must have known and must have reported it back to Washington. So, why did Obama's people, who had communicated with the coup leaders, fail to blow the whistle on them? Why didn't they expose and denounce the plot, possibly therefore foiling the entire venture? Instead, the United States kept quiet about it. A silence that, as Parenti says, in effect, even if not in intent, in effect served as an act of complicity. There's more. Stick around. Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon on the highway and up to 600 highway miles on the tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Before the hour. So, to what degree is Barack Obama complicit in the coup in Honduras that overthrew their democratically elected president, Manuel Zelaya? Michael Parenti is asking those questions. The coup could not have occurred. The Honduran military never would have done anything like that without the explicit, not implicit, but explicit permission or support from the U.S. military. And I doubt if the U.S. military would have acted on its own without oversight from the Pentagon, the CIA, or the Obama State Department. So what are we left with? Did Leon Panetta go into the House Intelligence Committee closed session on the 24th of June or the 26th of June and say, in the works is an overthrow of the government of Manuel Zelaya? There's nothing we can do to stop it at this point. I'm just letting you know now, and then 2 days later the coup occurred. Is that a possibility? Now, immediately after the coup, as Michael Parenti points out, Obama stated that he was against using violence to effect change and that it was up to the various parties in Honduras to resolve the differences. What? What? The president, the duly elected president of Honduras is thrown out of office by the military, which then starts killing people, locking people up, disappearing them, probably torturing them since that's what we taught them to do. And the president of the United States says the various parties there have to resolve their differences. I mean, I realize he ran on a platform of change, but is this the change he was talking about? Overthrow a duly elected government? Wait a second. Isn't that the big concern of the U.S. State Department and the U.S. government where it concerns Iran? What did the Iranians do? Steal an election? Maybe they didn't. But The outrage, of course, I realize Iran is a major, the third, the country with the third largest oil reserves on earth, that it is strategically positioned for our continued involvement in Southwest Asia. It is a threat to our dearly beloved allies in Israel, or at least the Israelis think it is. But Honduras, Barack Obama says that the various parties in Honduras should resolve their differences. He has had nothing to say, Obama hasn't, about the other acts of repression perpetrated by the Honduran military and the police, the kidnappings, the beatings, the disappearances, the attacks on demonstrators, shutting down the internet, suppressing the few small critical media outlets that exist in Honduras, as Parenti points out. That is what Obama, I mean, he says, well, they got to resolve their differences. Are you goddamn kidding me? Well, what does that mean? The government has been overthrown, the president tossed out of the country, a military suppression, martial law. How are these differences, Mr. President Barack Obama, supposed to be addressed? And who is going to do the addressing? Who? A union leader? A Catholic priest? Somebody who does not like the military? A member of the Honduran Congress? Who is going to step in front of the Honduran military and say, oh, wait a minute, guys, we don't like this? That's the end of him. And yet that's what Barack Obama seems to be suggesting. Oh, my God. Parenti says, another thing, Obama has refused to meet with President Zelaya. He dislikes Zelaya mostly for his close and unexpected affiliation with Venezuela's Hugo Chavez. And because of his egalitarian reformist efforts, Zelaya is hated by the Honduran oligarchs, who the American oligarchs own outright. These are the same oligarchs in Honduras who for many years have been close to and splendidly served by the U.S. empire builders, as Parenti puts it. Now, there's this. Under law passed by the U.S. Congress, any democratic government that is the victim of a military takeover is to be denied U.S. military and economic aid, period. Obama still has not cut off all of the economic and military aid to Honduras as he's required to do under law. So, as Parenti points out, that might be the most telling little piece of data regarding whose side he's on. And Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is even worse. She refuses to call it a coup and states that there are two sides to this story. WTF? Two sides to the story? Uh-oh. I don't know. Now, according to Leslie Clark in McClatchy newspapers, the political crisis in Honduras, political crisis is how it's being referred to, even by McClatchy. Come on, guys and girls, come on. You're about the only print medium left on earth, at least in the United States, that somebody like me can turn to and expect to get at least 80 or 90% of the truth. I can get 60% of it from the New York Times, but come on. The political crisis? Is that what you're calling a violent military overthrow of a democratically elected government? A political crisis. Okay. Anyway, Leslie Clark says the political crisis in Honduras has cost the country nearly $20 million in USA. $20 million. Some aid and international loans were suspended in the wake of the ouster of Manuel Zelaya. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said this week that much U.S. assistance, quote, is conditioned on the integrity of the democratic system, end quote. Are those weasel words? Is that something you would expect John Boehner to say? Well, Hillary Clinton, John Boehner, tell me the difference. Somebody, quick, please tell me the difference. Clinton added, but if we were able to get to a status quo that returned to the rule of law and constitutional order within a relatively short period of time, I think that would be a good outcome, end quote. That's the Secretary of the goddamn state of the United States of America addressing a military overthrow of a duly elected government in Honduras. Uh-oh. The the Obama administration said last week that it was suspending some aid to Honduras while it determines, now get this, here it comes. The Obama administration said last week that it is suspending some aid to Honduras, which, as I mentioned, the third poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. You know, in the top three is Haiti. What's the second one? Dominican Republic? No. Limbaugh drops a lot of money there when he goes down to molest people. But the third one is Honduras. The U.S. last week said it was suspending some aid to Honduras while it determined whether the removal of Zelaya met the definition of a military coup under U.S. law. What? God damn! They're studying whether the military overthrowing the government of Manuel Zelaya, who is elected by the people, and he's tossed out of the country. The military immediately starts what the military always does, suspend the Constitution, arrest the dissidents, attack the demonstrators, shut down the internet, get to the kidnappings and the beatings and the disappearances, and the Obama administration has to study it to see whether it meets the definition of a military coup under U.S. law. In the meantime, people in Honduras are disappearing and dying, and here we go again. And you can count on the Republicans in this country. Florida Republican Ileana Ross Lehtinen, the top Republican on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, today sent a letter to Hillary Clinton asking her to restore the aid, the little $20 million that's been cut off out of approximately $150 million that goes to Honduras. $20 million. See, that gives the Obama administration some cover. Well, we cut $20 million. Ileana Ross Lehtinen says, no, put it back. She's the one who wants to invade Cuba. Has always wanted to invade Cuba. She's one of these right-wing proto-fascists. I mean, she's right up there. She's not a neo-fascist. She's a proto-fascist. Well, here we are, truth seekers. Huh? What do you think? Leon Panetta said to the members of the House Intelligence Committee, you got a good choice here, torture, assassination squads, or hey, we're about to overthrow a government. Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 highway miles on a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. About 9 before the hour. Michael in Roswell sends me something here from the Associated Press, an article on several Republicans submitting legislation expressing support for the coup. And the article explains why Republicans like the coup plotters. Here's what it says. These reports of possible Zelaya drug ties, drugs, have come from none other than the newly minted Honduran foreign minister, quote, quote, Enrique Ortiz. He claimed in an interview that, quote, every night, three or four Venezuelan registered planes, land without the permission of appropriate authorities, and bring thousands of pounds and packages of money that are the fruit of drug trafficking, unquote. Really? Wow, drugs, huh? Just like the Clintons did at MENA Air Base in Arkansas, right? Yeah. Ortiz, as those who have been following this situation are well aware, was dressed down by the United States ambassador to Honduras for frequently invoking the racially charged pejorative Negrito to refer to President Obama. At one point, Ortiz described the President of the United States as this little black man, that's what Negrito means, who has no idea where Tegucigalpa is. End quote. But it gets worse. A third quote by Ortiz Colendres surfaced yesterday, made during an interview with an Honduran television station and cited in El Tiempo newspaper. In Spanish, he negociado con maricones, prostitutas, con nangaras, negros, blancos. Ese es mi trabajo. Yo estudié eso. No tengo prejuicios raciales. Me gusta el negrito del 20 que está presidente los Estados Unidos. I have negotiated with queers, prostitutes, leftists, blacks, whites. This is my job. I studied for it. I am not racially prejudiced. I like the little black sugar plantation worker who is president of the United States. The translator was being somewhat generous. In some places in Latin America, that particular diminutive, negrito, means my little homosexual black friend. The complexities of diminutives in Spanish change depending on the relationship of the speaker and the subject or object of the sentence, as Michael points out. Beyond that, these are the guys taking over the country by force. It'd be worth breaking the coup just because they're a bunch of a-holes. What? You're shaking your head. I can't say that word? I can't? How's your murder trial coming?
We get to go to deliberation.
Oh, that's right. Okay, don't say anything else. I don't know. I'm really grasping at straws here. I really am. When Panetta, who was special counselor to Bill Clinton, wasn't he? Yeah, I think he was. When Panetta goes into executive session 2 weeks ago with the House Intelligence Committee, the full Intelligence Committee, and says, look, now I'm paraphrasing, but essentially what he said is, look, what I said the other day, you know, a month or so ago when Pelosi had her nerve out, he said that was a lie. I've been lying to you. Hell yeah. I mean, this is a CIA. For Christ's sake, wake up, you people. Wake up and smell the coffee, okay? This is a terrorist organization. But it's our terrorist organization. This is what we use to overthrow governments, destabilize currencies. This is what we use to kill, murder, assassinate, torture, and destroy. So, you know, what? What do you want from me? Panetta, I'm sure, said, more or less. You want to know? Okay, let me tell you. Let me tell you something that you don't know. Here, I'll tell you something you don't know. How big a terrorist organization is it? Oh, my God, let's go back to 1953 and the overthrow in Iran. Let's go to Guatemala in 1954. No. I'll tell you what. Let's go to Honduras in 3 days. Hence, where we're going to do it again. Now, that's all bat squeeze and speculation, and you know and I know that I'm just making stuff up here. Right? Huh? Except for one very salient fact, and that is the people who overthrew Manuel Zelaya, or Manuel Zelaya, are trainees of the U.S. terror camp at Fort Benning, Georgia, the School of the Americas, as so many of the dictators and the generales and the assassination teams have been, who are then sent back to Nicaragua, Guatemala, not Costa Rica, no, not them, El Salvador, Honduras, Venezuela, Peru, Brazil. Just go right down the list. Mexico. To do exactly what they were trained to do at the School of the Americas. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Recently, new.
Welcome back. It is about 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Irish Dave writes, they're going to be really serious. You'll know they're really serious about Zelaya when they discover his kiddie porn stash. Right? Drugs. Drugs coming in from Venezuela every night. Big airplanes landing. Our Air Force doesn't know what to do. Right. It's incredible. From Roz in Canada, who writes, Mike, everybody knows the U.S. is the world's biggest bully. The economy is war-based now. They've got rid of all the manufacturing jobs, and there's nothing much left but the machinery of death, which they sell to everyone they can, including enemies. It's simply appalling. And don't you feel that you have totally lost control of your government and your country? We've all seen this train wreck coming for several years and talked endlessly about it. Now I think it's too late for the United States, as well as Canada and certainly Britain. As I said once before, Obama will turn out to be just another messenger boy for those who really put all the presidents in power. Democracy, my Aunt Fanny. Roz. Roz. The Guardian of the UK talks about the same thing. The military coup that overthrew Manuel Zelaya of Honduras took a new turn when Zelaya attempted to return home last Sunday. The military closed the airport, blocked runways to prevent the plane from landing. They also shot several protesters. And Hillary Clinton is having trouble calling this a coup, and the Obama administration, a military coup, and the Obama administration is saying there's two sides to this. You're kidding me, right? Mark Weisbrot, writing in the UK, says the violence in the enormous crowd, estimated in tens of thousands and reported as the largest since the coup on June 28th, the violence put additional pressure on the Obama administration to seek a resolution. In many ways, this is similar to the coup in Venezuela in 2002, which was, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, supported by the United States. And people wonder why Hugo Chavez thinks the Norteamericano government sucks. Maybe that has something to do with it, huh? Anyway, after it became clear that no government other than the United States would recognize the coup government in Venezuela, and hundreds of thousands of Venezuelans poured into the streets to demand the return of their elected president, Hugo Chavez, the military in that country switched sides and brought Chavez back to the presidential palace. You know, you could just hear, oops, sorry, our bad. We engineered that coup against Chavez. We had a couple of naval vessels standing off the coast of Venezuela ready to, assist any way possible. And why do we do that? Well, come on. 3, 2, 1. That's right. The oil. Venezuela is what? The third largest exporter of oil to the United States, or is it fourth? God damn it, he thinks it's his oil. Oh, geez, little communist bastard. He thinks it's his oil. So a couple of times they've tried to overthrow Chavez, and they being us, I'm sorry. A couple of times we have tried to overthrow Chavez, our delightful and always honest CIA. As the Republican said about Nancy Pelosi, Boner's still saying it. Well, you know, I've known the CIA for a number of years, and they're always honest. They always tell the truth. There's nothing weird going on here. You like my tan? I think Nancy Pelosi, you do like my tan. Thank you. I think Nancy Pelosi owes the fine professionals in the CIA an apology. You know how I get this tan? I go to a tanning booth right in the basement of the house every day. I do. You like it, don't you? Huh? Son of a bitch. In Honduras, we have the entire world refusing to recognize the coup government. And we also have large demonstrations. Honduras is only 7 million people. That's all. So these huge demonstrations, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people demanding Zelaya's return. The problem in Honduras is that their military, unlike the Venezuelan military, their military has more experience in organized repression, including selective assassinations carried out during the 1980s. Oh, yeah. Negro Ponte, John Poindexter, Oliver North, Ronald Reagan. The whole list of characters. Anyway, selective assassinations and repression during the 80s when the country was known as a military base for United States operations in El Salvador and Nicaragua. That's the Honduran military. The Honduran military is also much closer to the U.S. military and the State Department, more closely allied with the country's oligarchy and more ideologically committed to the cause of keeping the elected president out of power. Elected president, my ass! Colonel Herbeth Bayardo Inestroza, a Honduran army lawyer who admitted that the military broke the law when they kidnapped President Zelaya, told the Miami Herald, quote, it would be difficult for us, with our training, to have a relationship with a leftist government. That's impossible. Mr. Inestroza, like the coup leader and Army Chief General Romeo Vasquez, was trained at the School of the Americas here in Columbus, Georgia. So, as Mark writes, that puts a heavy burden on the people of Honduras who have been risking their lives, confronting the Army's bullets, beatings, arbitrary arrests, and detentions. The U.S. media has reported on this repression minimally, with the major print media sometimes failing to even mention the censorship in Honduras. But the Honduran pro-democracy movement, through their courage, has in the last few days managed to change the course of events. It is likely that Hillary Clinton's decision to finally meet with Zelaya was the result of the large and growing protests and Washington's fear, not Washington, the Obama administration's fear that such resistance could reach the point where it would topple the coup government. And then this, the Obama administration's behavior over the last 8 days since the coup provides strong evidence that if not for this threat from below, from the people, the administration, the Obama administration would have been content to let the coup government, the military, stall out the rest of Zelaya's term. Oh, my. Now, you've all heard that, if you've been following this story at all, you've heard, because I heard it, the first thing I heard, and I didn't know Emmanuel Zelaya, didn't know his relationship, didn't know the coup leaders until over the past 3 or 4 days when I started doing a little research. But you all heard what I heard, that Zelaya was the aggressor in Honduras, or at least equally bad as the people who carried out the coup. Remember what we heard? You remember what we heard? That he was trying to alter the constitution of Honduras so that he could succeed himself, right? A power grab. That's all it was. It was a power grab by this leftist Emmanuel Zelaya, right? Isn't that what you heard? That's exactly what I heard. Wrong! Wrong! Much of the major media's reporting has aided the effort to sell that story by reporting such statements as this, quote, "Critics feared he intended to extend his rule past January when he would have been required to step down." Well, in fact, there was no way for Emmanuel Zelaya to extend his rule, even if a referendum that was going to be presented to the Honduran people had been held and passed. And even if he had then gone on to win a binding referendum on the November ballot, the June 28th referendum, that's the day of the coup, was nothing more than a non-binding poll of the electorate asking whether the voters wanted to place a binding referendum on the November ballot to approve a redrafting of the country's constitution. If it had passed, the same ballot would have elected a new president and Zelaya would have stepped down in January. So the belief that Zelaya was fighting to extend his term in office is a lie. Although most people have been following this, seem to believe that it's not a lie. But the most that could be said with a new constitution would be that at some future date, like Daniel Ortega in Nicaragua, Zelaya could run again. Past the hour. All right, where were we? Second time today. Oh, yeah, the Obama administration's incredibly insensitive or outright idiotic comments about a military coup in Honduras. The reaction has just freaked me out too. I can't believe this. The reaction by the Obama administration and American news media. This is Honduras. This is a country that back in the 80s it was identified as an American military base. This is when John Negroponte was our ambassador to Honduras and ran the country. You remember that name, don't you? Of course you do. This is when Oliver North and John Poindexter and, just a whole list of people, criminals, thugs, killers, murderers, the terrorists were Americans all operating out of Honduras. I had a friend who flew into Tegucigalpa in, 78, 980, 182. In 1982, she flew into Tegucigalpa. She was going to work at a diving resort off the coast of Belize. And the flight, no wait, was it Belize? No, it wasn't Belize. It was off the coast of, I don't remember. But she had to fly into Tegucigalpa. I'm talking about Vicky. She had to fly into Tegucigalpa. And a couple of weeks after she left, I got a letter from her, and she said, "I don't know what is going on." Now, this is 1982. She said, I don't know what's going on down here. But when we arrived at the U.S., at the Honduran airport, International Airport in Tegucigalpa, the capital, we saw LL airplanes, Israeli airplanes. We saw the terminal was full of Israeli military. It was full of U.S. military. It was full of military people that did not have identifying insignia on their uniforms. What the hell is going on? She wrote. This is a woman I knew from New Zealand. And I wrote back, I have no idea. I have no idea. I don't know what you're talking about. This is in 82. This is before the real hell started to break loose. The real hell started to break loose in Central America. Oh, it was happening. It's just that we Americans didn't know that much about it. I don't know. The people without insignia obviously were trainers from the United States. Because she said they looked you know, Canadian American or Brit, you know, they looked white European style type American, whatever. Obviously, they were the people who were sent down from our CIA, our military, to handle all this stuff. One of the things that Negroponte did in Honduras in the '80s was to help, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, help the Hondurans write a new constitution. This was the constitution that Manuel Zelaya wanted to have modified, since the country, he thought, was no longer a military outpost of the CIA and the United States military. He thought that, until he had the absolute temerity to suggest that certain sections of the Honduran constitution, if the people of Honduras chose to do so, on a countrywide referendum, should be changed. And it was on the day the election was to occur, June 28th, that the Honduran military said, no, no, sorry, excuse you, what? You want to do what? Get out of town, literally. So there you go. I'm sorry. I know. We have other things to talk about except Honduras, but this whole stinking rat bastard, filthy mess that's going on in D.C. right now. All of this stuff about, Nancy Pelosi owes us an apology. John Boehner said, you like my tan? Nancy Pelosi. What did Pelosi say? I was lied to. CIA lied to me. And I said at the time, you don't have to be a genius to say this, Pelosi might say a lot of things that you could disagree with, but that wasn't one of them. Of course they lied to her. I mean, of course she blurted it out. Of course. That's what the CIA does. I mean, even Bush and Cheney said, well, the CIA gave us the wrong information. That's the reason we invaded Iraq. But I'll tell you this, the world is a much better place without Saddam Hussein, if you will. We had to break his goddamn neck at the end of a rope, right? But the CIA told us he had weapons of mass destruction. And if that turned out to be wrong, it's not our fault. That CIA, that all of a sudden John Boehner, the Republican minority leader in the House, seems to feel can absolutely speak nothing but crystal clear truth. Oh my God, what's that? Are we being attacked? Oh, it's time for a break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Skin, elegant, high. Making you feel.
racing, the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 highway miles on a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM Compact, crossover segment excludes other GM vehicles. It's about 25 before the hour. This is from Hector, who writes, point of information. Well, he has something above that, but let me just get to the point of his email. Point of information, President Zelaya was flown to Costa Rica when the coup began out of the Soto Cano Air Base, which is operated by the United States. Therefore, the tower had to clear the plane for takeoff, and I would assume the base personnel had seen the Hondurans arrive with the president and escort him to the plane. So it is difficult to believe the U.S. military did not condone the coup at a minimum. Hector. Well, you know, you can decide for yourself if it's a good idea to make an attempt after you have been elected president by the people, make an attempt to give the people the right to change the Constitution that was written by an imperial power, the United States, 25 years ago. Give them a chance to change the Constitution if they choose to. And if you do that, that stinks of democracy. That has the stench of anti-corporatism, possibly. That pisses off the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. That makes the United States Central Intelligence Agency nervous because, why change things? We wrote their goddamn constitution. We own Honduras. We trained their military. We put the people in power. We sent Negroponte down there for God knows how long. We built enough torture camps down there to wipe out the whole 7 million of little brown bastards, but we allowed them to keep living because we may need to stage something from Honduras against, pick a country. Peru? Venezuela? Cuba? Somebody, we always have. What's different now? And I'm getting a handful of emails from the usual right wing dumbasses who I'm not going to read them on the air. It's just hysterical stuff about I'm a communist. You know, you can always tell when you have some old bastard write to a radio station, to a radio talk show host like moi. You can tell that they're old, grouchy, probably have hemorrhoids and a bad liver and spots all over their faces when they use that term. Well, you're just a commie. You know, they're probably over 70 and still believe that, Ronald Reagan should have been deified or made Pope or something. You're a commie. God damn. You don't know what you're talking about. You're a commie. Whew. You want to open up the phones? Yeah, go ahead. You want to take some calls? Meanwhile, in Iran, you probably saw it on the nightly news, murder and mayhem is continuing there. I guess things calmed down and the CIA couldn't stand it, so they sent in some more operatives to stir the people up again, you think? Nah, come on, my boy. Also want to mention or remind you, Saturday, August 8th in Seattle, the AM 1090 Town Hall Forum, that is going to be going on out there. If you are in the Seattle area, I hope you're going to come up or come over or come out to this. It's sponsored by AM 1090, our affiliate in Seattle. I will be there along with Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, Bill Press, and Ron Reagan. And the discussion will be moderated by former chief political reporter for the Seattle Times, David Postman. You can get all the ticket information you want. You can go to the station's website now. Get your tickets at am1090seattle.com. 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 And if you live in, if you live close enough to come out, whether you live in Seattle or the suburbs or Portland or wherever you live, come on out. Doors open at 6 o'clock that night, or I'm sorry, doors open at 5 o'clock, and the fun and frivolity runs from 6 to 9 p.m. And this year's event, this is the fourth annual Town Hall Forum. It'll be held at the Showwear Center, which is just outside of Seattle. So anyway, you can go to am1090seattle.com and get your tickets. This will be the third one that I've gone to, or third or fourth. Maybe it is a fourth. I guess it is. I think I started when I was still with Air America. It's going to be a hoot. They usually, these events are usually a real hoot. I'm serious. They're kind of like a hoedown. So come on out. Go to am1090seattle.com. Get some tickets. Stephanie Miller will be there. Oh my God. Tom Hartman. Yay! Bill Press. Every time I see Bill, I just want to talk to him about his CNN days, or my CNN days or something. I'll be there, and Ron Reagan and David Postman, from the former chief political reporter for the Seattle Times. So it's going to be fun. Come on by. Okay? Seriously. Do it. It's August 8th, a Saturday. Ken is calling from Washington State. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Mike. Say, Mike, a couple of nights ago, you were discussing the events, pertaining to the Vietnam War and people who have made the money off of it. And most everything on there I agreed with. But there was one thing that you missed, in particular to me, and someone who had their bloody finger on the trigger of this thing, was Lady Bird Johnson. You know, she was a part of the Morrison, Knutson, Root, and Brown, which is now Halliburton, because she was a part of the Brown family. And there was tons of money made off of that war. And the fact that she had those radio stations, you know, popping up all over Vietnam, and then, of course, she had several...
No, wait a minute. I'm not aware of half of what you're saying. Lady Bird Johnson had radio stations in Vietnam?
Yeah, that was somehow under her control.
And she was one of the, her family was one of the founders of Kellogg, Brown, and Root?
Yeah, Kellogg, Brown, and Root. Yeah,
I completely missed that. In all the research I've done about KBR and Halliburton, I don't think I've ever come across her name, but I'll certainly take another look. That's interesting. I thought Lady Bird Johnson, all I know about Lady Bird Johnson is that she tried to beautify America's highways and get these goddamn billboards torn down.
Well, she did that, but I guess I said Morrison Knutson, but Kellogg, Root, and Brown anyway, but, you know, that's now Halliburton. And there was a lot of things went on. Many, many years ago, a fellow turned me on to a lot of this when I was just starting out in business in Colorado. And he was in the tire business at the time, and then was telling about how all the tires from certain name brand tires were shipped on over, and a lot of them never got there because of the construction company. And, you know, they would just dump these things on over and then just overboard a board ship and then go out and get another one because it was on a cost plus. There was a lot of corruption went on in that. It was horrible.
Corruption in what? The Vietnam War?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was awful.
Yeah. Oh, I know, again. But war always produces corruption. It's just, and thanks, Ken, it's just that the kind of corruption that war produces is the kind that it's kind of cool if you're the corruptor, because so many of the witnesses die. You know what I'm saying? It's a little bit different from what Limbaugh and Hannity and Beck and the rest of these rat bastards do in this country. Their fingerprints are not on the crime scene. And they make their money protecting the criminals who go kill and maim and destroy But in war, when you're actually in a war zone and you're a company, an American corporation, and I don't care about the other ones because, you know, I'm an American, and you're an American corporation, you can do anything you want to do and get away with it because you don't have to leave any witnesses. It's very simple. It's very simple. Oh, my goodness, a car full of investigators was blown up by an IED, by those dirty, rotten Iraqi. Really? And they were here to what, investigate us? Kellogg Brown and Rowe? Oh, my, that's really sad. Well, Jesus, let's get a notification to their folks back home. They were investigating us, were they? And they got hit by an IED. Son of a bitch. You know, war is really hell. Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon on the highway and up to 600 highway miles in the tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. One other thing here, and then we're going to take your phone calls. The number, by the way, is 877-996-2556. Chris sent this to me. Chris. All right, well, Chris sent it. About the Bush-Obama imperial presidency is wrong. Uh-oh. Chris writes that it's a direct attack on our nation's founding principles, antithetical to the most fundamental notions of morality, as profoundly un-American as it gets, a travesty in the extreme, a terrible, horrible tragedy. What is? Well, from today's Glenn Greenwald post at Salon, I believe it's at Salon, and he's referencing an excellent article in McClatchy Newspapers, quote, so we invade and occupy his country and then decide that although he worked against our enemies, some alleged associations he had reflect an agenda that conflicts with ours. And a source's unverified accusations that he helped our enemy entitle us to lock him away. So we abduct him from his country, ship him thousands of miles away to an island, stick him in a cage for 6 years with no trial, call him an enemy combatant, and then once he's released, he does nothing to engage in any violence or attacks on the U.S. of any kind, even though we're still bombing and occupying his country. There are so many cases like that where alleged enemy combatants, the worst of the worst, were released, and the notion that they are dangerous proven to be utterly false. Despite that, morally depraved people still blithely demand that anyone we deem to be a combatant be kept in a cage forever with no trial or charge of any kind, even if they are acquitted of the charges against them. Even now, defenders of Barack Obama's preventive detention policy, the indefinite imprisoning of people with no charges, insists that this is necessary because those in Guantanamo are too dangerous to release, and we cannot convict them in a real court. What's their basis for believing that people who have been convicted of absolutely nothing are nonetheless too dangerous to release? The government, our trusted leaders, claim it's true. So, it must be. No matter how many stories there are, like the one today from McClatchy's, where emphatic accusations about a detainee turn out to be totally false, no matter, the willingness to believe unproven assertions from government officials about Muslim detainees is never ending. So, here we have an Afghan citizen, not captured on any battlefield, who naively thought that he would be given a trial before being locked in a cage indefinitely by the U.S. He obviously hadn't heard that the U.S. is a country, because of people like this, that knows trials are obsolete and insists that we can abduct anyone we want from around the world, lock them away forever without such bothersome procedures. So the detainee surely knows all that by now, which is why he fears, excuse me, quite reasonably, that he'd be locked away again with no trial based on the Pentagon's anonymous accusations against him. And based on the current president's demand for the power to keep people imprisoned indefinitely with no charges or trials. Well, somnambulant Obama supporters, wake up. Whatever else may be true, the fact is that Obama is outbushing Bush when it comes to gutting the democratic foundations of our country, and those who remain silent about it are merely enabling the completion of the right-wing destruction of our national soul and character, materialized with such great energy, enthusiasm, and effect under the corrupt conservative misleadership of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. I don't know. What do you think, truth seekers, huh? The Obama administration, you know, just little incremental steps that, well, okay, well, he's got to do it because, you know, even your humble and obedient servant here up until a couple of weeks ago was plaintively whining into the night. It's got to be rope-a-dope. Well, what's he going to do? I mean, you know, all these policies by Bush are still in place. Can't, it's like a house of cards. If you pull the bottom one out too quickly, the whole damn thing comes down. So it's rope-a-dope. It's got to be because, you know, I was so convinced that Barack Obama was the political messiah. I was. Were you? Okay, not Messiah, but somebody who would pull us out of the criminal direction that we have been getting into, seriously getting into. We've had our ups and downs, but it's like for the past 25 years, no more ups. It's all downs. It's all a direct move into a fascist corporatist state with a very powerful and wealthy top 0.1% elite, and the rest of us trying to figure out what the hell happened. And therefore, Barack Obama's presidency was going to be one that would pull us all back from the brink, return the jobs, dismantle the military-industrial complex, put a crimp in the prison-industrial complex, restore truth, honor, justice, and dignity to our relationships with the rest of the world, free the people who have been held for 6 or 7 years with no charges in a gulag, close the gulag, the entire gulag, not just the encampment at Guantanamo. He was going to do all that. I knew he was going to do all that. Did I hear him say that? No. No, of course I didn't. But I knew it. I knew it because, well, he didn't say anything. Not really. And so I knew that he was going to do all this. I did. I really, really, really did. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Glad you can make it. The phone number here is 877-996-2556 if you would like to join in the conversation. This is Jesse calling from El Cajon, California. Hey, Jesse.
Hey, Winston. Repeat the truth. 19 hijackers brought the most sophisticated military in history to its knees.
Right.
Hey, I talk about Sears training. You know, these right-wing fascists know the media has their back. Because if you actually look when Sears training was enacted in 1955, what covert activity were we doing then? We weren't in a declared war.
No, we were setting things up in Central America, though, and the Middle East.
And Indochina.
Indochina, yeah.
And I believe Eisenhower, with good conscience, couldn't send these people, and I believe the draft was still on in 55,
mm-hmm.
into these covert activities without training them to the downside of being caught in in a country that they weren't invited to be in.
Right, right, that's true.
So as the people go, well, we tortured these people, but we didn't do anything worse than Sears training. Well, Sears training was a corporate method to protect the Pentagon or the Department of Defense from getting draftees stuck into an unattainable position from covert activity.
Yeah, let's make sure people understand what you're saying, Jesse. You're talking about SERE, not Sears, as in Sears the retailer. You're talking about the survival, escape, resistance, and what's the other one? Training that
yeah.
included how to resist different forms of torture, like waterboarding. Of course, there is no resistance to it. I think the training was more or less to prepare you for what could happen, but you can't train a human being to acquiesce in his or her own drowning. I mean, you know, that can't be done. So
sure, it can. I'm with you, man. It can't be done. But I believe Eisenhower enacted it, trying to clear his conscience that he's putting drafted people into a position that was outside the Constitution.
Uh huh. Well, you know, American Empire, let's remember the war in the so-called First World War and then the Treaty of Versailles, which brought on the so-called Second World War. It was all one war. But all of it was all the post-war criminal activity that the U.S. got into was first of all for the expansion of U.S. empire. That, remember, the 20th century was to be ours, but also because all of a sudden after 1917, what's this? The Soviet Union? What? So
a bunch of rabble rousers overthrew the Tsar and put the fear into the haves and have more.
Well, that's true. It wasn't so much their military might; it was what they were writing.
Exactly. And, you know, really, if you look at the grand scheme of things, the common person, does it really matter what form of government they have to live under? It's the people that have stuff to lose worry about it.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. All right. Well, Jesse, thanks for checking in, man. When's your next harvest?
Okay, I'll hook you up. My wife's got a little bit of a problem, so we haven't been making some trips, but I'll find some.
People think we're talking about marijuana.
Yeah. Let them think.
No, we're talking about wine.
Best way to travel, Mom.
Jesse owns a winery, right?
No, I know some. I help some friends with some of the processes.
Oh, okay. Well, it's always great fun to get a couple of bottles of wine for you from you in the mail. The postman at our little post office says, "What do you got in here? This feels like wine." Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Jesse.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Take care. Take care. That did sound like a talk radio drug deal going on, didn't it? Oh my God, that was pretty weird. Tom is calling from Louisville. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
It's going.
Yeah. Yep, it's going. Well, I just wanted to call and say that my reflections on what you're saying tonight about Barack, I just like to say, I worked for 4 years to register over 50,000 voters in Florida, and I'm glad I did. Built a database of people that we can contact to get organized, but I was never under the illusion that Barack Obama, you can't, you know, a rotting fish is a rotting fish. You know, you can't sew a new head on a rotting fish, and it doesn't change into a better fish.
Well, that's
this
true.
System of government is, it's this system of government is not built to bring about the will of the people, and anybody that ever thought it was should read some more history and study some more facts. A two-party system that we call it a democracy, but how can a democracy be a two-party system?
Well, that's
number one.
Yeah, that's a good point. Plus, we don't even elect directly elect our presidents.
Right.
So yeah, no, I hear you. I'm not that's why I feel sort of like a clown or a fool, is because I bought into my own fantasy, Tom. That's all. That's all I was saying. I bought into my own fantasy.
Well, you know, my first clue on Barack was when he announced he was willing to compromise on drilling offshore of Florida, and you're like, wait a second.
Yeah.
And when I started hearing the words clean coal out of his mouth, listen, I live in the state of Kentucky. I was born and raised here, and I can tell you, there's nothing clean about coal mining. There's no clean coal. There's no such thing.
No, there isn't.
No such animal.
No. And never will be. It's like talking about dehydrated water.
Exactly. So we have to, as I see it, we have to go back to the streets. We have to organize. And the only thing, you know, what is it? Freedom is a constant struggle. Nobody ever got it without a struggle. We've got to get out there, and when there is momentum on the street, then Barack will say, I am listening to the will of the people, and that's the reason we'll win anything we ever won. And the one thing I remind people is this. Some of the most progressive social programs in the history of this country were signed into law by Richard M. Nixon. And why was that? It wasn't because he believed in those things. It was because there were riots in the streets.
Right.
It's because people were organizing. You had the American Indian Movement, the Black Panther Party. You had a convergence, and he went, okay, we got to throw some bones here.
Right.
That's how we ended up with any of those social programs that we got out of him signing.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because he was a progressive. It wasn't because he was a great guy. It was because he went, okay, they're about to burn down the house.
Sure. Sure.
And that's my perspective. And Grant, you know, I'm sure Barack, let me tell you what I think is going on with Barack. Barack is going, I'm going to do this. And then four Democrats that have sold out are going to go, you know what? If you do that, we're going to take away this.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, huh, okay, okay. Well, maybe we can't do everything we want to do. And once, one by one, they sit there and whittle away his entire agenda. That's what's going on. Mm-hmm. And, I'm not saying that he's not a sellout. I'm just saying that even if he's not a sellout, he's sitting up there going, these guys are just going to chip me away at the knees until I don't have any legs.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
we just need to know the nature of our government.
Yeah. Well, you make a strong argument, Tom. You do. I hear you. I hear you loud and clear. I think what I was saying pretty much, though, was that screwed up in believing a couple of things. And we got a break coming here, Tom. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. Always good to hear from you. Believing a couple of things. That first of all, our system could produce someone who would fight the power and get us back at least in the direction of a democratic republic or participatory democracy. That was false thinking on my part. Our system, as you point out, does not produce that kind of leadership because it can't. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Wake up and smell the java. Sit up and pay attention.
Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon on the highway and up to 600 highway miles on a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. It's about 22 past the hour. Back to your calls. Steve is calling from Austin, Texas. Hey, Steve.
Oh, how you doing? Good to talk to you again.
My pleasure.
When you were talking about Honduras and everything was happening, it just suddenly flashed on me, oh, don't forget Indonesia, until I add to the list of the CIA accomplishments.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've also, you got a two-for-one there in Indonesia. Not only did they overthrow a government and just awful things happened, but they pissed off a lot of Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I just, it reminded me of the movie You're Living Dangerously.
Oh, yeah.
And how powerful it was, and it just scratched the surface.
Mm-hmm.
So just to add that to the list.
Well, there's not been, as far as I know, there's not been a global hotspot. I hate to sound flip, but there hasn't been a global hotspot in the past 65 years that hasn't been made hot by the CIA. The Central Intelligence Agency, you know, it came out of the old OSS, I believe, which really was a spy organization. They were seeking intelligence. They were looking for information. The CIA is no more interested in information than I'm interested in a case of genital warts. You know, the CIA is there to it's a terrorist organization by definition. By anybody's definition, it's a terror organization, and it's run by terrorists.
Yep.
They just happen to be terrorists with American names and American addresses and American political affiliations, the corporate affiliations, and but if you look back, all the way back to about 1948 or 49,
mm-hmm.
and any sort of chicanery or international treachery look just below the surface and you'll see the CIA. Now, a lot of Americans can't stand that reality. They just run from that sentence. Or I get emails that say, you're a goddamn commie, because, you know, I'm sitting here like I make this stuff up. You know, like that's what I do all day. I sit here and make up stuff. I pretend like the CIA overthrew the government of Iran in 1953. I pretend like the CIA overthrew the government of Guatemala in 1954.
Yeah.
I pretend like we had Ngo Dinh Diem assassinated in 1963. You know, it just goes on and on and on.
And on and on.
Right. But the average American, not you, not the people who listen to this program for the most part, although, you know, I do have the lurkers, but the average American doesn't have a clue. Well, you know, we all bought in to the mom flag and apple pie, horse hockey. It doesn't work that way. You might as well scream into the darkness. Hey, Steve, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in, okay?
You bet.
All right, sir. Take care. That's the part I think that is so disconcerting to me. That I have listeners who will send me emails telling me I am one sick son of a bitch, that I hate America, I'm a commie, I don't know what I'm talking about. How could I possibly accuse the CIA of being a terror organization? What do you call it? Patriotic? That's an interesting point, isn't it? One person's terrorist organization is another person's patriotic resistance organization. Apply that line of thinking around the globe, you right-wing nutballs. But the point is, from the standpoint of the people or the countries or the leadership or the economies or that we have attacked and destroyed and undermined and short-circuited and overthrown and assassinated, to those people, of course we're a terrorist organization. What the hell would you call it? What would you call that sort of an organization? Friendly? But the emails continue to come, and you know, I used to think back in the day, well, you know, Malloy, if you just keep talking, eventually you'll convince some of these right wingers that of the error of their ways, and you'll cast the scales from their eyes, and they'll be able to see. I'm sorry, I did. I used to think that. That's why I've said in the past 10 years that I've been doing talk radio, there are no answers here. There's nothing here on this program, except this is where we get together and talk about it. But there's no truth here. There's nothing here. There's no education here. There's no nothing. It's just talk.
Shout the last word, put your good sense out the pasture. Drop your IQ, that's what I do. My advice to girls and guys who wanna be a Nobel Prize finalist. Rocket scientists, try applying this. Keep the customers coming around. If you're smart, then you better start dumbing it down. Don't say anything too profound. Dumb it down.
If you're thinking...
Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox. With an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon on the highway and up to 600 highway miles in a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. It's 25 before the hour. Got an email here from Cap Mary in Memphis, who agitates for truth, freedom, and a boiled egg. An egg can be eaten, and it's good to have at least one attainable goal. That's why. Cap Mary writes, quoting Saul Alinsky, whom you're familiar with. I like to quote him. Here's what Saul Alinsky said. Any revolutionary change must be preceded by a passive, affirmative, non-challenging attitude toward change among the mass of our people. They must feel so frustrated, so defeated, so lost, so futureless in the prevailing system that they are willing to let go of the past and change the future. This acceptance is the reformation essential to any revolution. Saul Alinsky. And then there's this one. Once you accept your own death, all of a sudden you're free to live. You no longer care about your reputation. You no longer care except so far as your life can be used tactically to promote a cause you believe in. Saul Alinsky. And Mary adds, seems like we're so close to it all now that we're stepping on its snout. Yeah. This will be in your paper tomorrow. Newt Gingrich, former Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, has said that the U.S. should sabotage, his word, Iran's oil and gas infrastructure as part of our efforts to bring down the government. It's crazy, son of a bitch. Newt, you're not supposed to say it out loud, you dumbass. You're supposed to get the CIA to do it. In an interview with Al Jazeera's Avi Lewis for the Fault Lines program, Republican Newt Gingrich said targeting Iran's refineries would spark an economic crisis that would destabilize the government into Iran. He said the United States should, quote, use covert operations to create a gasoline-led crisis to try and replace the regime, end quote. He went on to say, quote, I think we have a vested interest. The world has a vested interest in a responsible Iranian government, just as we have a vested interest in a responsible North Korean government, end quote. You can get this. Go to English.aljazeera.net if you want the whole story. Now, to you right-wing trolls that listen to the program, you're always telling me, oh, what do you mean the CIA lied? Come on, for Christ's sake. Former Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives just puts it out there. And, you know, I would imagine that Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and the rest of these psychopaths, these people who should be silenced because they are in the same way that anybody who tries to overthrow our system and replace it with a form of fascism should be silenced. You know, we don't allow people in this country anymore to contribute, Muslims or non-Muslims, to contribute to Muslim charities for fear that the money might go to, a bullet that might be shot toward Israel, right? So what do? We close them down. We arrest their leaders. In this country, we put them on trial. We charge them with acts of terror against the United States, or acts of terror in support of international terrorist organizations. And we consider that to be justice. And yet we have 15 or 20 people on the air in this country every day who are doing more damage to the United States than 20 Muslim charities. And these sons of bitches should be closed down. They should be stopped. We don't believe in freedom of speech in this country. We believe in freedom of speech for certain people. And others don't get that right. Limbaugh and Hannity and Savage, and make your own list. You know who they are. O'Reilly. They are lying sons of bitches who are destroying America. They're devouring it. They're ripping it to pieces while they make millions and millions of dollars. They should be stopped. Their programs should be taken off the air permanently. Yeah. So Newt Gingrich comes right out and says it, and he'll be celebrated tomorrow by these right-wing vermin. Sabotage them. Destroy their fineries. Blow things up. Newt, Christ Almighty, you're about a half a century too late, you half-wit. You don't think that's been going on in Iran since forever? What do you think the Shah was, you ignorant little twit? The Shah was the absolute spear point of the U.S. taking over Iran. Too bad the miserable bastard got cancer, right? Newt? You'd know about cancer. Didn't your first or second or third wife have cancer when you walked in and told her you didn't want to make child support payments anymore? You pig. You porcine gullumfer, you. God. Destabilize Iran. Come on, Newt. We've been doing that for 50 years. Jesus. Newt just figured out, hey, you know what we ought to do? We ought to destabilize Iran. I want to be president. Am I president yet? Christ. Scott is calling from hell?
Yes. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Calling from Austin. Hey, Scott.
Hey, I am one of those right-wing nut jobs that you despise so greatly, so I'm concerned. You weren't sounding like your chipper self tonight until you read that story about Newt, and then you were right back in the saddle, so I'm no longer worried about you.
yeah?
But hey, listen, I heard you talking earlier about the Sears School. When I was in the Navy, I went through Sears School, and I guess idea of it was that they were putting into your head the idea that you could survive something like this if it should ever happen to you, because this is what they do. Of course, when I got out, I realized, how in the hell do they know what they do? There's no way to tell, but they have put the idea in your head that you'll be okay, which I think is what their goal was in the whole thing. And the second point I wanted to hit on was the idea of the mainstream media, mainstream America here, which is, they don't like to go too far to the right, and they don't like to go too far to the left, and they'll sit there and they'll let us, right-wing nut jobs argue with you left-wing nut jobs all night long, think they were both a bunch of nut jobs. And as long as they don't see the government going too far one way or the other, they're okay with it. And I'm starting to come back toward the right from where they were when Obama was elected.
Scott?
Yes.
What are you talking about? I you're not making any sense to me whatsoever. What are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about mainstream American, okay? You guys, you guys, you believe on the left side. I'm fairly to the right. But most of them travel that center path. And if they see the government starting to...
Most of who travels the center path? What are you talking about?
Most Americans, the majority of American citizens, or the voting bloc, don't spend as much time worrying about politics as, say, you and I do. I mean, we may be on the opposite side.
I thought you were talking about media.
No, not the mainstream media. I'm sorry, I may have misspoke.
Because mainstream media is totally right-wing, completely. You know that.
Well, it may be.
It's your media, Scott. It's all yours. You and people like you support, and some of you actually own about 97% of what passes for media in this country. But I hear you guys bitch and whine and pee your pants and complain constantly about the mainstream media isn't fair to you or whatever. And you know what, Scott? I just get sick of it. I really do. I don't like whiners. I don't care what kind of school you went through. I don't care if you were in the Navy or space cadet. It really doesn't matter to me. You know what I don't like? I don't like whiners. I don't like liars. And I don't like cowards. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. Sometimes again it seems all I have is words, but you finally see my other side. Hey, but I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Before the hour, thanks to the crew, all under the firm guidance of our executive producer, Catherine Bay. They know who they are. Oh no, really? Okay. Mark is calling from Orem, Utah. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How are you tonight?
I'm fine.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I listen to your show most evenings on my way home, and while we disagree on several things, I do appreciate your viewpoint, like your show.
What do we disagree on? I'm just curious.
Well, tonight I called just simply because the viewpoint of shutting down, Limbaugh or whoever, it seems that that viewpoint is driven because their ideology differs from yours.
No, no, absolutely not, Mark. I'm not an idiot, okay? I've been in this business. I've been in media business for 40 years. I've been a writer, a producer, a talk show host, a columnist, an editor. When something smells like vomit, I'm pretty sure there's a pile of vomit someplace. When somebody is putting out anti-American propaganda 24/7, pro-corporate propaganda 24/7, you don't have to be a genius to be able to figure out what they're doing. Now, if you want to buy into the garbage and the right-wing nonsense that these guys put out every day, have at it. That's your right. But you're fooling yourself, pal. And what I'm doing is saying there's no such thing as free speech in this country, all right? You cannot say certain things. If you say certain things to me, Mark, I'll sue you. If somebody says certain things to you, you'll sue them. Now, if there were free speech, that wouldn't happen, would it? So speech is restricted in this country. There are certain things, like here in the South, if you use certain language to me and insult me, I can put a bullet in your head. And when the police come and get me and take me to court to be tried for murder, I have as a defense what is now referred to in the state of Georgia as fighting words. And there are people getting off as a result of killing someone and then proving that they issued fighting words and therefore deserved to die. In Texas, up until recently, it was legal to kill someone who was boinking your wife. If you came home and found... So there's another example. Freedom of speech is nonsense. Since it is nonsense, since there are restrictions on speech, shouldn't there be restrictions on speech that blankets this country 24/7, day to day, by an entire cadre of neo or proto-fascist bastards who want to end the United States as we know it, as you know it? And let me tell you something, Mark. You know, you think you're on their side. You think they care about you. You think you share their ideology. Do you know how quickly, if their form of regulatory government goes into effect in this country, do you know how quickly someone like you would be smashed like a bug? You really don't think they care about you, do you? Do you really think that Rush Limbaugh is talking about your goals and dreams and ideas and philosophies and problems? Do you really, Mark? I'm not going to put you back on the air here because your phone is all screwy and it's messing everything up. But that's why I've had you on hold here for the past 2 minutes. So you can just nod your head if you want to. Frankly, I'd prefer that you not call the program. There's no reason for you to call. There just isn't, any more than there's a reason for me to call Sean Hannity's program. It's stupid. It's a waste of your time. It's a waste of my time. It's a waste of my audience. You know why most people listen to this program? To get away from the right-wing drivel, to get away from Limbaugh and callers like you who call his program and tell him, oh, Rush, yeah, you're so right. No, Mark, it's not a matter of a difference of opinion. A difference of opinion is when you think, I don't know, the New York Yankees are going to win the pennant, and I think, no, the Atlanta Braves are. That's a difference of opinion, pal. What the right-wing talkers are doing to this country is called treason. It's called destruction. It's called ending the country. It's called corrupting the system. It's called a protection racket for corporate America. And you know what? It is not a difference of opinion. Oh, and one more thing. Did I mention they don't give a goddamn if you live or die? Don't you get that, Mark? What you represent to them is one thing and one thing only, a pair of ears that sits out there in Orem, Utah, and listens on your local right-wing affiliate station, so that when you get one of those Arbitron diaries or people in your neighborhood do, you all can write down, Rush Limbaugh! And Rush makes another $100 million. Come on, Mark. Wake up. Claim your life. Try to get your soul back. You know what you sound like to me? You sound like a zombie. You really do. You sound like the Tom Lacoute has gotten a hold of you and sucked out your soul. You ought to try to get it back, pal. You'd be amazed how your brain clears up. Did I leave anything out? I guess not. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.